Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 5, Narada's Teachings to Vasudev, Text Number 45. Ashtita Shriya Dukto Nishanga Yasya Separam From you, Vasudeva. Api, also. Etam, these. Mahabhaga, a most fortunate one. Dhanamham, principles. Bhagavatam, of devotional service. Dharmam, principles. Shrutam, which you have heard. Ashtita, situated in. Shraddhaya, with faith. Yuktaha, endowed. Nishangaha, free from material association. Yasyase, you will go. Param, to the Supreme. Translation. O greatly fortunate Vasudev, simply apply with faith these principles of devotional service which you have heard, and thus, being free from material association, you will attain the Supreme. Purport. Narada Muni related to Krishna's father, Vasudev, the story of the enlightenment of King Nimi. Now Narada reveals that Vasudev himself will also achieve the supreme perfection of life by practicing the same principles spoken long ago by the nine Yogendras. Actually, Vasudev was already a personal associate of the Supreme Lord. But due to his natural humility as a great devotee, he was determined to perfect his love of Krishna. Thus we can observe the exalted status of the parents of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ordinary persons feel that the Supreme Lord is always to be worshipped as the Supreme Father who supplies everything for the living entities. Such an attitude is not the perfection of love of God, because when a son is young, he is incapable of giving much service to his mother and father. When the child is very young, it is rather the parents who are constantly serving the child. So when the devotee takes the role of mother or father of Krishna, there is unlimited opportunity for rendering loving service to the Lord, whom the devotee ecstatically accepts as his son. It was Vasudev's good fortune that Narada Muni personally revealed to him the wonderful teachings given by the Navayogendras long, long ago to the saintly King Nimi. Translation again. O greatly fortunate Vasudev, simply apply with faith these principles of devotional service which you have heard, and thus, being free from material association, you will attain the Supreme. So here, in this verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see so much information given the sages here at Narada Muni. He's finished this wonderful pastime of instructing Vasudev, Krishna's father, and about the history of the instructions given by the Nabi Yogendras to King Nimi, and he is now beginning to explain to Vasudeva his own fortunate position as a devotee of the Lord. And we see in this verse the nature of devotees giving instruction, that he doesn't just haphazardly race into the next description, or that there are not big jumps and leaps from one thing to another, that this verse gradually moves into the whole next mood of instruction, that nothing is left out. And this, of course, is our great fortune, to hear literatures like the Srimad Bhagavatam, where everything is complete, and just step by step each instruction is given, and there is so much information there. This literature is not like many other literatures in the world, actually, where spiritual knowledge is, just little snippets here and there, disconnected, vague statements, something where it's very difficult to put the pieces together and to understand, and get a solid grasp on spiritual teachings. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, you see this, beautiful continuous flow of information, step by step. Actually, when I read the Bhagavad Gita, that was the thing that when I first read the Bhagavad Gita, I actually read a little bit of philosophy. I used to read a bit of philosophy when I was before I was a devotee, mostly impersonalist philosophy, because that's all that was really available. And I used to read such things as how, through meditation we can meditate upon the over-self. There was a book called by Dr. Brunton. So he was English, I think, but he'd written a book on the philosophy of India, how by meditation we can become one and realize and become one with the over-self and realize that we are the supreme soul. And at one stage, I actually, thought that was possible. And these things that actually, even Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his early life, he also read some impersonal scriptures, and he actually admits it's so dangerous. And of course, this is a pastime for Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, not for me. But he admits that at one stage he actually thought that we could become one with the Supreme like that in an impersonal way. And I actually was also, getting that same conception. I remember one time I had a dream. I used to have a lot of prophetic dreams. And one day I dreamt that I was sitting on the beach in a bathtub. And there was a little shower thing coming over. And so I was having a sort of a shower in the bath on the beach. I was watching the sun. The sun was in the sky, and it was a beautiful day. I was really enjoying myself in this bathtub. Anyway, the sun sank on the other side of the ocean, and I thought, gee, I was really enjoying myself here. I wish I could make the sun go up and down in the sky. And as I said that, in my dream, the sun went back up in the sky. So I sat there enjoying my bath, and then gradually it came down again. And I went, no, I'm not ready yet. And the sun went back up in the sky. So of course, reading these books and then waking up from such a dream, you could imagine the crazy, weird thoughts. How yes, maybe it is possible. Maybe I can become one with universal consciousness and control the sun and the moon like that. So, anyway, there are a lot of things that didn't fit. The fact that I was suffering incredibly in the material world, and somehow it was God in my dreams, and in daytime, you know, I couldn't get anything together. So some things in the philosophy didn't quite fit. But when I read the Bhagavad Gita, the thought that really struck me amongst everything was that I felt that I was reading a literature which was taking all the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle and putting them together as one whole picture, and all the pieces that were missing were also suddenly there. And that was my impression when I first read the Bhagavad Gita, even though I didn't fully understand the Bhagavad Gita, but that's my, as I was reading, I thought, oh, there's another piece, and you gradually form, actually very early on, you can see the picture coming together. Ultimately, that we are the eternal servant of the Supreme Lord, and there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Krishna, and he, in fact, is the controller of the movements of the sun and the moon and all the planets and everything within this universe and many other universes. So that picture became complete. And of course, that's answered all the unanswered questions as to why we're suffering in this material world and so many different things like that. So, Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, of course the Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study, and Srimad Bhagavatam is it takes up from where Bhagavad Gita leaves off. So here Narada Muni is saying that Vasudev is saying, O greatly fortunate Vasudev. So, and at the end of the purport, it says that it was Vasudev's good fortune that Narada Muni personally revealed to him the wonderful teachings given by the Navayogindras long, long ago to the saintly King Nimi. So, Vasudev, of course, was the an eternal associate of the Lord, so he was in a relationship with the Supreme Lord, very, very dear to devotee of the Lord. And this is the sort of events, very special events, that would happen in the lives of such a great personality. We wouldn't expect that for us here in Kali Yuga that we would also experience such similar events. And yet here we are, we also get the opportunity to hear these instructions by Narada Muni on the teachings of the Navayogindras. So that is a very, very, even then it describes that these are very ancient teachings. Very ancient, very detailed, and the teachings, basically understanding these teachings allows one to develop a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, an intimate relationship, and therefore become free from material association in this world and go back to Godhead. So that's extremely valuable information. How to become, how to develop pure love of God. Very, very valuable. And we have that same opportunity here. So he says that you simply apply with faith these principles of devotional service which you have heard. Again, if we take many of the various scriptures of the world, and if you collected all the spiritual instruction that was in all the scriptures of the world and collected it together, it wouldn't equal a fraction of the information that is here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, even in just this one pastime of Narada's instructions to Vasudev. as told by the Nava Yogendras, you take all the religious scriptures and you get all the information in the spiritual life, it doesn't even, you know, the scales are unbalanced. What to speak of? So to hear that, therefore, is a great fortune. We become especially fortunate because, in one sense, as I said, you wouldn't expect that those events happening, those very auspicious, wonderful events happening thousands of years ago to such great personalities as Vasudeva, that we are also experiencing that same event. Others, of course, in this age of Kali, people are not interested in religious scriptures anyway. And a lot of religious scriptures are also filled with so much contradictory information because people have tampered with religious scriptures. So even when people read various scriptures of the world, they have to somehow sift through that which is correct and weed out that which has sort of been, you know, added, you know, speculations. There are some, you know, political motivations in there from various political rulers. There, you know, from the past and the present. You know, there is so much nonsense mixed in with it. And actually trying to read through and say, oh, this is the correct part. These are the original teachings of Jesus. These are the original teachings of Muhammad. Or these are the original teachings. People just can't do that. And therefore, they're even less fortunate because even what information is there is they can't discern. And therefore, quite often, people will actually, you know, people are losing faith in scriptures. People are losing faith in God. They're losing faith in religion because they just can't, you know, get a clear sequence of instructions, a clear sequence of a conversation of a great saintly person revealing spiritual knowledge, which is not filled with so much other nonsense. And of course, when people, if you read something and something has the ring of truth, and yet the very next sentence just makes no sense at all, you tend to just think, well, who is this person who compiled this religion? You know, maybe they weren't so perfect, so why should I, you know, accept any of it? So they throw the baby out of the bathwater, so to speak. So generally, what people do then, of course, is they try to get information on spiritual matters from other sources. Again, I remember before being a devotee, I went to a meeting with a friend who sort of coerced me to go in. People have been abducted by aliens. So that's one source of spiritual knowledge in the age of Kali. And so I went along, you know, a little bit sceptical, but I didn't discount the fact that there may be aliens in this world. I spoke to some of the people, some of the leaders and what have you. Everyone in the room had some different marks on their body where they'd apparently been abducted and couldn't explain. They woke up with, you know, a couple of strange marks on their body and what have you. They all had their stories to tell. And the information, some of them had information which they wanted to get out to mankind, like this. So, you know, this is, unfortunately, the source of spiritual knowledge for people in Kali Yuga. Others go to people who channel information. They're called channelers, and they go into a trance of meditation, and they supposedly talk with people from the various stars, you know, the dog star and the star, and they talk to people who supposedly were the Eric von Daniken wrote a book about what are they called, The Chariot of the Gods. So there was a documentary previously put out showing how space people had previously come to the earth and you know, given people in Egypt and these ancient civilizations the knowledge that they had. Otherwise, you know, the very advanced civilizations are unexplainable, and they show all different pictures of, you know, very ancient, even Aboriginal drawings where they show spacecraft and what have you. So not that these things didn't happen, but people do, you know, accept that there is some higher knowledge out there, and they try and channel that information. And again, I've been to different meetings where you know, looking for some answers, for some knowledge, for some on the spiritual path, reading different books, talking to different people. And the problem that I always had, and the question I always asked these people, they would go on for hours about this information that they'd got from the stars. And I said, even, you know, I'm not going to question the fact whether you've heard this information or not, but my question is, you know, how do you know who you're talking to? You know, how can you verify that the person you're talking to, communicating this knowledge, is not someone who's just playing with your mind, you know, and just some mischievous person up on, you know, one of the stars who's actually just giving you misinformation in order to just be a, you know, a rascal? You don't know, you know, like, what? How do you know? What is the authority? What is the position of this person you're getting knowledge? Because generally, of course, these people who get this information from these various sources, they want to change the whole, you know, course of the mankind, the way that we do things, and it's all based upon, I mean, they want to make big changes in the world. They want the world to be run in a different way, and it's based upon this knowledge which is coming from someone they don't know, you know, whose authority is doubtful, up in the stars. And they don't know whether that, you know, there's some information they get. Sometimes they get information which is, you know, very scientific, technical information, mathematical information, what have you. You know, it's this, you know, in some ways it appears, sometimes there's communication, in some ways it appears that people are just, they may get, like many clairvoyants, they may get some premonition at one or two points in their life, and therefore they think everything that comes in their mind is a premonition. Right? You notice that, and therefore, oh, now, you know, I make lots of money. And then anyone that asks them a question, yes, whatever is in my mind is a premonition. Because, you know, once or twice they might have had some mystical experience where they could actually, you know, perceive something and got a correct answer through, you know, mental telepathy, and therefore they believe, I have this power. So everything that's in my mind is mental telepathy. Everything that comes into my mind is correct. So in this way, there's a lot of confusion. There's some information, but you can't work out what is bona fide, what is not bona fide, you know, where that person's particular neurosis and craziness sort of kicks in with that information. You mix it all up like that. So we're actually very fortunate to, you know, hear from a Bhagavatam just this knowledge, very, very practical, you know, very sane personalities who have complete control over the mind, complete control over the senses, and whose prime motivation is out of compassion for all living entities, and their qualifications to speak knowledge and to receive knowledge is you know, more than verified by their, you know, wonderful activities. So very, very fortunate to hear. If one applies this knowledge, one becomes even more fortunate. So here Narada Muni is actually saying that simply apply with faith these principles of devotional service which you have heard, a greatly fortunate one. It's one thing to hear knowledge, to apply that knowledge makes one more fortunate. For instance, Srila Prabhupada, in one of his lectures, I think he was in Vrindavan, and he was saying that if you read these books, and he was talking about Nectar Devotion and you know, nectar of instruction, the various books by the Goswamis, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, of course, by Krishnadas Kaviraj Thakur, that if you read these books, you're associating with the Goswamis of Vrindavan just by reading them. And then he said, and if you follow their instructions, you're actually worshipping and serving their lotus feet. So there's a higher level by practically implementing in the same way that by hearing these associations, conversations from Narada Muni, we actually associate with Narada Muni. In one part of the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada says, you know, we thank Narada Muni for appearing on the pages of this Bhagavatam. You know, he's personally present. So we associate. We associate with the Navayogendras and King Nimi and Vasudev. And if we apply these instructions, we're actually practically worshipping their lotus feet, and they accept that worship. And that's very, very fortunate. If we apply these teachings with faith, one is even more fortunate. Sometimes, very unfortunate people, as we describe, they have no real source of spiritual knowledge. But sometimes, they actually take real knowledge, such as the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, the various Vedic literatures. They apply it, they hear it, and they apply it, but without faith. So, there's no benefit. In fact, there can be a lot of harm from that. To give an example, Srila Prabhupada talks about Radha Krishna, the Radha Krishna movement, where he claimed, and his followers claimed, that you know, previously 5,000 years ago Krishna appeared, and now he is back, that here I am. So he claimed that I am that Krishna who appeared 5,000 years ago, and I am that Ram. And as was described the other week by Shalindra Jumnaswamy, that I think the quote came from him, his movement, Yatamattatapat, that, you know, whatever path, that's his instructions, whatever path you take, it's okay, it all leads to the success, you know, the same goal. As Srila Prabhupada, so you see, this is applying the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. So he's teaching the Bhagavad Gita, and of course in the Bhagavad Gita it describes, you know, Kama Yoga, Jnana Yoga, there's worship of the demigods, there's, you know, Stanga Yoga, there's Bhakti Yoga. There's various different things. Whatever you take, it all leads to the same goal, Yatamattatapa. So Srila Prabhupada says that this 5,000 years ago, when Krishna appeared, he said, you always think of me. You bow down to me, you worship me, become my devotee. And then when he's changed his mind. Oh no, now you can worship anyone. I've changed. That was back then, you know, this is now. And so you can see that there's no real faith in Krishna's instructions. You know, you think of me. No, we have no faith in that. Krishna's saying think of me, but that doesn't really make sense, because he's just an ordinary person, a historical personality. And, you know, now I have come back. I am the supreme Brahman, you know, within this form. I am the same supreme that was within Krishna. So now it's the supreme within, you know, that you should follow, and therefore I am saying, giving this instruction. Another interesting point about that was that Ramakrishna, he claimed that he became God by worshipping goddess Kali. All right? So again, Srila Prabhupada points out that 5,000 years ago, Krishna said, if you worship demigods, you're less intelligent. And now he's saying, no, by worshipping the demigods, you become the supreme intelligent. So this is, so you can see the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita but there's no faith. They're hearing, they're applying, trying to apply even Vedic knowledge, the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, but there's no faith whatsoever in the words of Krishna. Krishna says, you worship demigods as less intelligent. I have no faith in that. I will worship God as Kali, and I have become supreme. I become God. So actually, it's actually very dangerous. Therefore, Narada Muni is saying, you know, hear and you apply, but you apply it with faith. I did a ceremony the other day for one gentleman, and I always ask what they follow, and he was saying that he mentioned some person who, you know, writes about Lord Shiva and what have you, and I said, do you read Bhagavad Gita? And he said, oh, you know, whatever you follow, it's the same thing, that's what I believe. So he, you know, said the same thing. And so I said to him, well, it's interesting, the Bhagavad Gita doesn't teach that. The Bhagavad Gita teaches a different thing, that if you actually worship Krishna, then everyone becomes satisfied, whereas if you separately try to become perfect, neglecting the Supreme and trying to, you know, serve all the individuals or the various demigods or yourself or what have you, you cannot become happy, you cannot become perfect. So Krishna gives one way, and the way that you've mentioned is actually not there in the Bhagavad Gita. And Srila Prabhupada says, it's like if you later on we'll go take prasadam, and of course we'll get that prasadam, we'll put it in our mouth, and because we know that we have to give that food to the stomach, and then automatically all the hands and the legs and the eyes and everything is nourished. But if you take that food and put some in your eye, like that, you get some, you know, big handful of hot khichdi and, you know, put it in your eye, it's not going to work. There's one way to do it and the other ways don't work. Okay? So you just become blind. That's what Srila Prabhupada says. If you eat like that, you'll become blind. You keep shoving food in your eyes, your eyes like it, you know, maybe 1 or 2 days. So this is it's quite funny, but the fact is that people do become blind, spiritually blind, by trying to avoid serving the Supreme and instead trying to, you know, follow paths that actually serve all the parts of the Supreme. It doesn't work like that, such as the demigods or themselves. So by actually following the Bhagavad Gita with faith, following the teachings, the Vedic teachings, applying them with faith, one becomes free from material association and attains the Supreme. But if one follows them without faith, even though the literatures are correct, then one becomes literally like a dog, like a foolish, crazy person. It is a totally different effect. So crazy that one will think, even though one is suffering so much in the material world, the person is so deluded that they think they're God. And as Prabhupada mentions, as soon as someone says, I am God, you have to know that that person is the most sinful rascal. You know, as soon as they say like that, yes, I am God, you immediately know that person is a very sinful rascal. There's so much, you know, there's practically to think like that means that they're prepared to justify anything that they do as being all good for everyone. Whether they kill people, rape, murder, destroy, whatever they do, because they're God, it is all good for everyone. It is a justification. By that one statement, you can justify any sinful activity within this world. Sometimes people commit, you know, various heinous activities which are very hard to justify. But when you claim to be God, you can justify everything. And you have to know that that person, why do you want to justify any heinous thing? Because that is the nature of a, you know, a sinful rascal. You know, somehow concocting, creating, inventing different excuses and reasons for their heinous activities. So, therefore, you know, applying even Vedic knowledge without faith leads to a person who becomes very degraded. They become, you know, blind to knowledge of self-realization, what to speak of God-realization. There's no question of God-realization if one cannot even understand the beginning teachings of Bhagavad Gita, that we're not this body, that we're spiritual by nature. First we understand that we're a tiny spirit, and then by understanding that we're a tiny spirit, we can gradually come to the point to understand the Supreme Spirit to some degree. But if we can't get that first understanding of our own spiritual nature, which takes less understanding, it's less knowledge, it's the beginning understanding. To understand little spirit soul is less than understanding the unlimited spirit soul. One cannot say, yes, I understand the Supreme Lord, but I have no understanding that I'm not this body and I'm a spirit soul. It doesn't work like that. So, therefore, now, of course, the result of people either not having heard proper spiritual knowledge, or having heard spiritual knowledge and not applying it, or having heard spiritual knowledge, applying it but not applying it with faith, there's a combination there. When everything is perfect, then one becomes on the spiritual platform and one becomes free from the material concept of life. There must be hearing of spiritual knowledge from the right sources. It must be a bona fide source of spiritual knowledge. One must apply it, and apply it with faith. Means that no adding, you know, and subtracting. Just take it as it is and apply it. When that is there, one understands the Supreme Lord. One understands the science of devotional service. And if that is not there, one thinks that one is an enjoyer in this material world, or after becoming believing that we are the enjoyer in the material world and yet being frustrated, one then comes to the conclusion that now I'll become God. Okay. And actually this concept, you know, is because people are very, very frustrated, everybody wants to be God in this age of Kali. And as described previously in previous lessons, therefore in Kali Yuga, the Lord is who is Tri Yuga, he comes as Chana Avatar, or the hidden avatar, because everyone wants to imitate him and be God. So he comes as a devotee. So, or if he doesn't come as a devotee, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, still his appearance is covered, disguised. It is known to the devotees of the Lord, but to general people it's not so much understood, so not so much advertised, so that they're not going to imitate. But this may be the greatest goal for someone who has no knowledge, is to become God. But actually the devotees, they look at that, to become God is not very... there's actually something higher than that. It's not actually very... it's actually very distasteful, but it is not a very elevated position anyway, because the devotees understand that actually you can become greater than God. Not that they want to become greater than God, but they that is the mercy of the Supreme Lord, that he agrees to become subordinate to his devotee. The devotee is not thinking, let me enjoy, control Krishna, because as long as we're in that mood, we can never control God, because He's God, because He's the Supreme. Devotees don't think like that. They don't try to conquer God, to exploit Him, to exploit His resources. They have the mood that they want to serve the Supreme Lord. And by serving the Supreme Lord with love, He agrees to become conquered. So that's a, you know, it is a very, very amazing realization. It's quite a, you know, if you think of that concept, that the Supreme Lord, who controls all the unlimited universes, manifests all everything that happens in all the spiritual worlds and all the material worlds for all time to come, will actually become subservient to the devotee. That is actually a fact. This is here, Narada Muni is pointing out, this is actually Vasudeva's position. That he's in the role of Krishna's father. Krishna has agreed that, yes, I will be subordinate to you, I will be like your son. You know, what you tell me to do, I will do. You chastise me, you give me instructions. Although he's God, you know, he went to school and, you know, took the estate because his father, of course, wanted him to, you know, be educated, take initiation. Yes, but I'm God. You go to school. And you know, Krishna will bring, you know, the slippers for Nanda Maharaj and carry them on his head. So he is very, very eager to become subordinate, because he is, although he is ajit, unconquered, unconquerable, but he agrees to become conquered by his devotee, and he likes that his devotee is in a superior position. It's explained here. Why is that? Is because generally when we're in an inferior position to the Supreme, it means that we depend on Him and take service from Him. Even though we may be offering some service, there is a majority of receiving service from the Lord and being maintained. But when the Lord allows us to, if a devotee thinks, you know, I just want to give more and receive nothing, oh, then the best position is you become in a superior position, because then you can serve unlimitedly, always giving, 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 and it is God that is taking, taking, taking like that. So when a devotee's service has that mood of you know, pure love, without any just that mood of giving and never wanting to take, is there, then Krishna can fulfill that in so many different ways, such as this parental relationship. So that is Vasudeva's position. So this is quite a powerful philosophy. To tame the unlimited power. We see that in this world, generally things that are taken as very powerful, you may, you know, like bears. You know, if there's a strong bear in this room, very powerful bear. Sometimes bears, you know, walk out of the forest and come into the towns, and people go running in fear because they're so strong. You know, they slap you on the head, your head will just go rolling up the street. You know, they hit you once in the chest and they'll cave, you know, all your ribs in. You know, they slash you like that and they'll just rip you to, you know, just tear you to pieces. And just, for them it's just like this. And they're so powerful, so strong. There's one man in America who one day he was, I think a bear came to his home. He sort of lived in the forest, and you know, there was this great fear, this bear's going to kill me, tear me to pieces. And somehow or another he struck up a friendship with this bear, and this bear actually you know, reciprocated, that somehow he felt this love from this person, that this person loves me and he's not fearful and what have you, and they became friends, and the bear would, you know, regularly come and visit him. And so this person, he's still living today and he's still doing the same thing. He thought, gee, this is okay, you know, he is this powerful beast, and because I'm affectionate to the beast, the beast is completely controlled. And so he goes into the forest and looking for wild bears to hug. And they see him and they can sense he just wants to give us a big hug. And the bears will come up and they'll lay on the ground. And they'll just roll and hug. And so he's actually, you know, he's trying to hug every bear he can find. You know, there's some bears that he hasn't, you know, hugged yet. And you know, he's got like, there's about 50 or something that he's gone and hugged. But the bears say, oh, here he comes, and they just treat him like one of the family. They're more gentle with him than they are with each other, because he's like this, you know, because they're these big bears and he's like this little human, you know, they know that, so they're just so gentle with him. There are different stories in the we see in the Christian tradition also. There was Daniel, who I think he was thrown to the lions. But the lion, who is, you know, ferocious and really angry, Daniel noticed that he had a thorn in his paw, and so he took the thorn from the paw. So, you know, he had compassion. He wanted to offer service to this lion. The lions just want to rip his head off and, you know, drink his blood. And he's thinking, you know, if I could offer some service. He takes the thorn out and the lion became, you know, like a little kitty cat. There's actually a nice story also in the Vaishnava tradition with Rishikananda. You know that story where Rishikananda, he was a disciple of Shyamananda Prabhu. The Shyamananda, Srinivasacharya, and Narottam Das Thakur, they were very intimate associates, and they all studied together under Jiva Goswami. The dearmost disciple of Shyamananda Prabhu was Rishikananda. So Rishikananda, he was so absorbed in love of God and trying to deliver everyone he could. He just, you know, his heart was just flowing with compassion for all living entities. He loved everyone. And there was not a, you know, a critical or envious or, you know, distasteful mood in his entire being. He was so absorbed in Krishna's Leela, and he appeared a little bit like Krishna, that when people saw him, they actually felt that they had seen Krishna. That's how they felt that, oh, I've seen Krishna. You know, are you Krishna or are you Rishikananda? I mean, they would think like that. So naturally, he became very, very popular. And there was one Yavana king who was becoming more and more angry that, you know, here this Rishikananda, he's even converting the Yavanas into, you know, Vaishnavas. And so he actually, this Yavana king was, you know, a very ferocious person. He, you know, his daily habit, He would, anyone, the various other little kings around the area, he would, you know, forcibly make them come, and then he would forcibly make them, you know, you give up your religion, I'll kill you, and, you know, you become a yavana at that. And if they would, daily he would kill, you know, one or two people, just to make it show. Every day he would kill one or two people. So he's very, very... heinous person. So he wanted to stop Rishikananda from converting people, yavanas, into Vaishnavas. And so he said, you know, you come here and we'll have some discussion. So all the followers of Rishikananda, they understood that he wants to kill you. Don't go there, you run for your life. But of course, Rishikananda, he had complete faith in Krishna, and he also would like to deliver this yavana from his hellish mentality. So he went there. So whether it was accidental, or some say the yavana king arranged, there was this wild elephant who would at that time he was trampling through the villages around where the king's palace was. He's killing people, killing animals, a very, very wild, ferocious elephant. So when Rishikananda was there, he said, you know, this wild elephant, I have heard that you are literally on the level with Narayan. So if that's true, if you can give this elephant Harinam initiation, I'll take initiation as well. So, of course, everyone was very fearful for Rishikananda, because they thought, you go to this elephant and he will crush you to pieces, pick you up in your trunk, smash it on the ground and trample you like that. But he went down and he came face to face with this elephant, and he was chanting. And when this elephant, again, when he saw Rishikananda, how beautiful he was, and the sweet sound of his voice, and he could perceive the the love and the affection, because Rishikananda was just, he actually wanted to show kindness and mercy. He wanted to deliver this elephant as well, make him a Vaishnava. And so that elephant, he slowed down, and he's racing around. All of a sudden he came to a stop in front of Rishikananda. He's looking down his trunk at him. And Rishikananda, he said, you just surrendered to Krishna. He destroyed the pride of Indra's elephant, Airavata. He delivered Gajendra, the king of elephants. You just give up your pride and your angry mood, and you surrender to Krishna. So when the elephant heard Rishikananda and saw his beauty, he actually bowed down before Rishikananda. Because by Krishna's grace, this is an example, of course, how Krishna becomes conquered by his devotee. Krishna actually follows the mood of his devotee. This is how we preach Krishna consciousness. If a devotee thinks nicely about some particular person, that person becomes delivered. Because when a devotee glances at different people, advanced devotees, and they think kind thoughts, then Krishna follows their mood. Yes, we will deliver this one. I will deliver this one like that. So he becomes completely conquered. Someone like Rishikananda, hear this elephant. So Krishna said, yes, I will give him full knowledge. He can understand everything you're saying. And so the elephant listened as Rishikananda preached to him about Krishna consciousness. And then he bowed down, he placed his head on the ground, and tears were flowing from his eyes and washing the feet of Rishikananda. And then Rishikananda put his hand on his head and whispered the holy name into his right ear and gave him initiation. So then the elephant got up, and the elephant circumambulated Rishikananda and then again offered his obeisances. And then Rishikananda says, so now your name will be Gopal, Gopaldas. So he gave him his spiritual name. So then the elephant, he was ecstatic, Gopal, he was ecstatic. So 100 times he offered his obeisances like this. And then he was like a big puppy. He didn't want to leave Rasika. You know, it took a lot of difficulty. He became so attached. And Rasika Nanda said to him, you know, you go back to the forest, you travel to all the places of pilgrimage. When you see sadhus, you help them, you bring them food, you do some services, whatever you can do like this. And so that's what Gopal used to do. He used to travel all over and serve the Vaishnavas. And he could understand what they were saying. And he was always trying to find out where Rasika Nanda was travelling. And if anyone would mention Rasika Nanda's name, he would immediately bow down. And actually one time he understood that Rasika Nanda was going to some particular place. But Rasika Nanda actually got lost in the forest. And Gopal went and found him and took him out of the forest like this. So there you see, you know, different examples that we see even, you know, in modern day. There are examples in our Vaishnava history of that which is so powerful you could not conceive of, you know, that power becoming subordinate to someone who is of far less influence. But we see it does happen. It's quite miraculous. But there is no greater miracle than the Supreme Lord himself taking that position. And that is the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's phenomenal. To think about, to conceive. Actually, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was travelling through South India, I think it was, and he came across one Brahmana, and of course he saw one Brahmana reading Bhagavad Gita, and that Brahmana was shedding tears, and he asked him, you're reading Bhagavad Gita, which part, you know, where's, which part are you getting this nectar from, you know, Bhagavad Gita? I see you showing these ecstatic symptoms. And he explained that I cannot read at all. I don't know which part. I don't know whether I'm reading correctly or incorrectly. I don't know. Because I cannot read. But my spiritual master asked me to read it. So I have faith in that, his instruction. And so here you see also, someone's actually heard from the spiritual master, applying the knowledge with faith, even though he's actually incapable of doing it. So therefore that faith is an essential ingredient for success. And so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was surprised, and you know, how is it that you're feeling such ecstasy? He said, when I'm trying to read this Bhagavad Gita, the picture comes to my mind of Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and yet he's become subordinate to Arjuna, and he's become his chariot driver. Such love from the Supreme Lord, you know. Such a reciprocation of love is, you know, breaking my heart. And of course, if anyone doesn't cry, I remember one time I went up to my spiritual master, and I watched that the Sham dance. And when I watched it, you know, I couldn't help it, you know, a couple of tears come down there. And I said that to my spiritual master. And he said, so you should. Yeah. You know, spiritual life, if we understand what's available, how much the Supreme Lord is willing to, you know, reciprocate in love, we should be, you know, able to shed some tears. It's so beautiful, so wonderful. That is the message, of course, of the Bhagavad Gita. Quite often we take the message of the Bhagavad Gita that we must surrender to Krishna, but we forget that part. That Krishna is also saying, but I will surrender to you. We forget, oh, we must surrender. Keep that book away from me. But Krishna is also saying, I'm the charioteer of Arjuna. I'll surrender to Arjuna because of his love. So here also in these we see this with Vasudeva and the relationship of Vasudeva and Krishna. Vasudeva and Krishna. So Narada Muni is explaining that if he simply applies with faith these principles of devotional service which he has heard, you become free from material association, you will attain the Supreme. So of course it's that special loving reciprocation that each and every devotee has with the Supreme Lord that helps them to rise above the attraction for the material energy. There is nothing in the material world that can actually compare to what Krishna is offering. And by tasting even just a fraction of that relationship, the material world is not such a formidable the one who meditates on Krishna's lotus feet like that, then the whole material world just shrinks up to the size of the water contained within the calf print of a little calf. The devotee easily steps over. So these are some of the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. We're very, very fortunate to hear them. And if we hear it with faith and apply it in our life, then we can become free from material association and attain the Supreme. So I have any questions or comments, just quickly? Yeah. Are you asking me? Yeah? Right. Thank you. Yeah, that it is an increase of love. Yeah. First, we try to understand to some degree the Supreme Lord and our relationship with Him, and that helps us to revive the love. The dormant love is there. So through understanding, hearing about Krishna, gaining transcendental knowledge, the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, it unlocks that dormant love which is there. And then by increasing the purity and the intensity of that love, we gradually go through the different stages of service. And if we are attracted to a particular very elevated type of love of particular devotees, then we, if we hear about their pastimes and meditate upon their mood, then gradually that creates a desire within our heart to serve the Lord like that. So this is one of the principles, of course, of the nectar devotion, that if we want to attain that particular loving mood, such as the parents Krishna, then we meditate upon those particular devotees who are very expert in that service, and gradually by doing that we emulate their mood. In the same way that for instance, when one takes a spiritual master, by meditating upon their service and trying to, apply some of the things that they're doing, we gradually, our level of devotional service comes more and more to their level, to the level of the spiritual master. So by that, meditation and practical application, and that same principle applies all the way up to the perfection of the loving relationship that is available to us here. Without that meditation on, for instance, if we don't meditate upon the spiritual master, how they're doing things, what is their mood, we cannot get to their level of devotional service. It just won't happen. And similarly, if we don't meditate upon the residence of Vrindavan, we cannot enter into that level of devotional service. So we literally take shelter of them. And by the that's done under the guidance of Srimad Bhagavatam, nectar of devotion, the spiritual master, the devotees, and if it's done properly like that, then one is guaranteed success. It's the same principle stated here, that you hear, you apply it, and you apply it with faith. It's the same principle. So that works on any level of devotional service. We hear, we apply it, and we apply it with faith, you get the result. Any other questions? Chai, all questions are proper.